to introduce our first speaker, Mark Kay from D.C.
Thank you. Good afternoon, family. My name is Mark. I'm a very, very grateful recovering addict. And it's by the grace of God that I'm here today. You know, what I say and what I've heard, a couple of things, what I've heard in here, it's a process, not an event. It's a process, not an event, but you got to do the work. You got to do the work. Want to thank the D.C. area for asking me to come and speak on this workshop. It's an honor and a privilege to speak anywhere when you're talking about recovery. And also congratulate them on their 25 years, all of the regions that have put this convention on. And I guess, I don't know, you know, I've done this before, but I get nervous, and I was sharing with my speaker that I was nervous, and it's a thing that I do that sort of helps me. So are there any other addicts here? If you just raise your hand. Okay, it's a few. All right, who's glad to be here? Okay, all right, so I'm in the right place. I'm in the right place. I'm doing something on weekends that's down in Richmond, but what I was taught when I came here, when somebody asks you to share, and no matter what level, you do what you got to do it, because they did it for me. My topic is, recovery is your responsibility, you know, and I guess, you know, to qualify, and just briefly, native Washingtonian, one of 10 children, both parents, mother, father, they were good, they didn't drink, they didn't smoke. My father was from South Carolina, and I used to think he was, I say he was Obama, you know, I was born in D.C., but he's my hero. You know, I found out nothing is new under the sun, and he was slicker than I thought he was. And we just didn't talk because we were so much alike. So what happened, how I got into this thing of addiction, it was 10 of us. I liked clothes. My mother told me, you know, I didn't like them tennis shoes. And I'm dating myself. Go to the grocery store, they had the tennis shoes in the bags and them funny pants, you know. And my friends was wearing slick stuff, Gabs and Bally's and Johnson and Murphy's and Dobbs. And, you know, and I said, well, Ma, that's what I want. And she said, well, you got to go get it. And she meant go get a job, you know. And I took it another way, you know, go out in the street, hustle, do whatever you had to do. So I didn't want to be an addict. And I went out there. I was very young. I was a big kid, you know, probably I wasn't as wide as I am, but I probably was as tall. And what I remember, and I went out there, and the first time I went out there, I took some of my father's clothes, the Dab, the Gabs and all that, and went to this spot, pinball machines. I know y'all don't know what they are, you know. And they had a spot that had 25-cent hamburgers before Mickey D's. And, you know, he complimented me on my outfit, and a guy took me up there, and the implication, he was going to take it, you know. And I stuck my chest out and said, "And if you can take it, it's yours." You know, he didn't take it, and I was a member of the club, and I hadn't picked up anything, you know. And so that started that career. You know, eventually I did pick up the drug of alcohol. Addiction moved right along. You know, I wasn't that hustler. You know, I became my best customer. Didn't really think I was an addict. You know, a lot of denial because I could get a job, I could buy things. You know, and my family wouldn't call me an addict because they loved me too much. You know, and they didn't know. And if they saw that the outside looked okay, I was all right. You know, and basically what happened at 23. You know, I'm an intellectual idiot too. You know, I said, man, if I was going to do, and I'm not proud of the criminal activity. Let me say that. I should have did it when I was a juvenile. So when I became an adult, I would have a clean record. But at 23, the dominoes started falling, and most of it was related to addiction, you know, and still didn't think I was an addict. Usually if I ended up in court in front of a judge, they would tell me I was an addict and I was addicted, and I'd shake my head and say, yeah. But once I got through the door, I said, I got them suckers one more time. But how many know that the sucker was me? You know, Narcotics Anonymous was not in this area like it is now. The other fellowship, an AA fellowship, was here. I didn't think I had a problem with the drug of alcohol. So, you know, it wasn't for me. And just went on this cycle, intellectual idiot. I read everything and tried to fix it that way. I talked to them experts in the street and said, you need to do this and need to do that. And every time I ended up back in misery, it was progressing. And I don't know, it's funny to me. I read the newspaper a lot. You know, I like to read, I still like to read. And I used to read Dear Abby and Ann Landers. And people probably don't know. Yeah, I'm dating myself. I'm 60 years old. I'm 60. You know, it's 30 more years than I thought I would live. And they was talking about the other fellowship and things that was happening. But N.A. had sort of eased on in here. And the people who started N.A. in D.C. came from A.A. You know, they came from A.A. and they started, I don't know, about 3 meetings at first and then 6 meetings. They used to do them in the dark with candlelight. I was on parole, usually federal parole, and one of the ladies that was big in the fellowship worked there. And when I first came around in 1983, February 1983, hung for about a year. Did the social acceptability version of recovery. You know, I had a sponsor, never called him, but somebody asked me who was my, oh, so-and-so my sponsor. You know, worked, you know, I still wanted the clothes, you know, the money and all of that, but, and I could quote the book, I could tell you what you needed to know to help you, but I could not apply it to me. You know, and what happened after being dry or whatever for, you know, 9 months, I said, I don't need y'all no more. You know, my pockets had the mumps. I had money and had a job. The family had came back. I said, I don't need these whining, weak so-and-sos. You know what I mean? Because most of them was crying about a woman. You know, a woman and did me wrong. And I said, man, what's wrong with them people? You know, and I didn't get it. It was another guy was the angriest guy that I ever met, because he was always killing somebody, but he was a photographer. He did it with the camera, you know, and but he stayed clean. He stayed clean. But after 9 months, I stopped going to meetings. If I don't hang around recovering addicts, I'm going to hang around practicing addicts. I mean, that's just the nature. And what happened was I went back to them spots where I used to go, and they said, oh, you look good, and congratulated me, just keep doing what you was doing. But all I could say, man, they high. You know, that thing in the back of your head, man, they high. And basically what happened, you know, I got off probation. I hadn't been in any trouble for a while. In the 23 years of addiction, I never had a possession. And April 1985, I think Georgetown lost to Villanova, big college basketball fan. I remember they lost to Villanova. Next day, U.S. Park Police was locking me up. You know, some people call it a blue light special, you know. And they locked me up. I was in my 30s, was 34. I'm native Washingtonian. I didn't know they had a lockup at Haynes Point. They do. But those who don't, they do. So they took me down there, and I ended up over the new jail where I had never been. It was a bunch of young kids. Don't have anything against young kids. I was 34. They was calling me Pops and Dad and Grandpa. And I said, man, what? I'm not that old. You know, and I guess the other thing, I came out the fall. You know, I realized I was on probation with 15 years backup. I forgot all about it when I had this misdemeanor, and I figured I'd be out. And I called my PO and started lying and plea bargaining with him, and he said, well, bag and bag it, you out of here. You know, and I prayed. I said, God, if you get me out of here, I'll go to meetings, I'll get a sponsor, I'll work the step. You know the things we do. And the slowest person I know that's always on time got me out. You know, and when I came out, I had good intentions. My mother used to say that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, and that was her favorite saying. And I came out and I was going to go to meetings. I had a scheme that I didn't go to meetings, went on about it. I don't know, 7 to 10 day run, but grace came in. You know, this guy who had been using when I was dry had saw me, had came into the rooms. And I thought my mother was calling this guy because his family lived, well, I lived in Maryland, Silver Spring, but my mother lived in D.C. I thought she was calling him, that fool over here, come and get him, take him to a meeting. But it was the grace of God. He would come around there, and he was one of them people that you couldn't tell no. And even though I was still using, I would go to a meeting. This other guy who used to use in the place where I used up in Northwest, who I didn't like, he was going to meetings even though he was using. And he asked me for a quarter to catch the bus. Bus was 25 cents then. You know, he asked for a quarter, and I asked him, where you going? And he said, the old trust clinic, he was going to meet. I said, man, you can go to meetings when you're high. I thought you had to go to detox and get a new outfit, manicure, you know, all that food stuff. You know, and he said, yeah. So basically, I started going to meetings. I went to report, you know, I got out, I went to report to my PO, and this lady was down there, and I had came around before, and she said, baby, when you coming back? Because you know, big old guy, I'm trying to slide around and duck her. And she said, baby, when you coming back? And I went and talked to her, said, I'm ready, I'm tired, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And she called the guy and picked him a sponsor for me. I was probably the same height, a little taller. I think I'm losing height now. This guy was probably 6'6", weighed 750. You know, he was a big guy. He was a Josephite brother. My car was an impound. He gave me a Saturday morning appointment where I had to get on the bus and the ride on, but I went over there. And, you know, had a meeting. I mean, you know, it was like a screening meeting. You know, I don't know if I should sponsor you because you're too slick, which I like because I thought I was slick. But he was saying I was real, real sick and I needed help. And he sponsored me. I should have went to jail this time. I didn't go to jail. He sponsored a lot of people because of my self-centeredness and selfishness. And I don't fire a sponsor. He's deceased, but he was my sponsor until he passed. Been here a while, and probably three sponsors I have buried, might have been four. But I started sharing with this other guy. You know, I was going, you know, I talked about them weak people and the women. Well, I became one of them. You know what I mean? And I was crying about the mother, my kids, and I'm staying in my mother's wherever she let me stay. I got three sons, and they was over there with their mother's mother, and I said, you know, they're going to turn them to homosexuals. There's no men over there. But it's nothing I could do, you know, but start working on my recovery. They had me going to meetings, the first sponsor going to meetings, going to the family groups. This second guy told me I needed to go to step meetings. I started doing that. I went to a lot of meetings. A guy gave me a formula. And he said a magic formula, don't use nothing, pray, go to a meeting every day, get a sponsor. He's got a sponsor that has a working knowledge of the steps, and if you do this, you will recover. You know, and recovery is recovering human wreckage, but also helping you recover from whatever drug that you're using. It's a process. It's a process that continues to go on. My clean date is May 19th, 1985. And all I have is the day. I don't get caught up. All I have is the day. I know that to be true. Have been through a lot of life experiences using the steps, the traditions. I was a rebel. I was one of them NA rebels, you know, long as you got them clean. And after a while, I learned about traditions. And I guess I found out, one, I was an addict, and I had no responsibility over my addiction, even though I thought I did. But when I come in here, that's when the rubber hits the road. You know, that's when I got to do what I got to do. It don't matter how much time you got, you have to go to meetings. You know, this is me. You got to give it back to the best of your ability. You got to participate in service. And with me, there's no big eyes and little U's with me. You know, I don't take credit. I'm not one of them, I don't know, show and tell people. I've been blessed work-wise, job-wise. I'm at a job, hopefully in a year or two I will retire. It's in the federal government, and I'm a person that has a criminal record. I have a really good job. You know, and that's a fringe benefit. I've been able to travel. Unfortunately, I've buried nephews who followed my way, and I try to share with them, you know, you're going the wrong way. And also, I buried a wife. It'll be 4 years, May 12th, who was younger than I was. And you know, but recovery keeps you clean. Life is good. You know, I've been able to travel. And again, it is your responsibility. You're not responsible for your addiction, but you got to come in here, show up, and do what you need to do. You know, unfortunately, some people who start getting time and start doing other things, they sort of forget about this. And some of them move on to church, and there's nothing wrong with church. And everybody know if you want to save your soul, you go to the church. If you want to save your behind, you come in here. You know that's enough out of me. You know, again, I want to thank the D.C. area for asking me. And it's something I heard, it's better to come in here and keep on trying than to stay out there and keep on dying. Thank you. Wow.